Good morning. Sorry, when I say good morning, I remember the growing up as a Catholic, and I realise I probably interspersed a lot of my stories with Christian tales, so I apologise for being a Buddhist, but it's my my cultural background. But it all used to be very formal, and there was kind of a wave of informalism that swept through the church, and the priest would always say, "Good morning, everybody," and no one would answer back, because it was all very formal. But then sometimes there was a movement that came through until suddenly went along to Mass, and everyone would go, "Good morning, Father," you know, which is a huge change. I was talking about old Father Kirby, who boasted he'd never prepared a sermon in his life. And he always gave the same sermon. I remember there was a Zen teacher in London who's French, who also claimed the same kind of wisdom. And he came over to our Zen centre, and the Tenchin Roshi gave him some very stern advice about needing to do some preparation. Anyway, today's Friday, and sometimes funny when you get into session, it's like, it's irrelevant, whatever you call this. But it does mean we've been here for a full day, and 2 days to go. So, if you've been sitting a couple of days, then you start to notice the body's got some. you notice when you do have a body, and that it's not particularly used to sitting in a posture for this amount of time. So just encourage you to take care of your limbs and your joints, and again, if you need to sit in a chair sometimes for some periods, and encourage you to do that too. It's not a practice of masochism or pain is instructive to a certain extent, but only to a certain extent. I think it really activates the kind of the lizard or survival portion of your brain, and it's hard to relax if you're really struggling. So just reflecting that Sesshin is a beacon or a container or a large, really large bowl that we're kind of looking into when we sit and when we walk and when we eat. And there's all these things that we would normally not pay attention to that we do pay attention to, because they become the most exciting or the most noticeable thing. And there's a phrase that Dogen Zenji, who's the founder of Zen, Soto Zen in Japan, talks about the what we call the 10,000 things. He says that the self advances and confirms the 10,000 things is delusion. That the 10,000 things advance and confirm themselves is enlightenment. And so that 10,000 things, it's like the 10,000 things is really describing all phenomena. And it's quite, I think it's interesting in Sesshin, like talking about that, the things that come up, it's like 10,000 is like a really big number. It could be a billion things, but it's also just things, things are all kinds of things. Things are solid, things are emotional, it's a great word, things. Don't say it too often, it becomes ridiculous. thing. Anyway, 10,000 things. Language is an amazing thing. Anyway, so 10,000 of them, millions, billions, trillions of things, and that the self advances and confirms the 10,000 things as delusion. Really interesting phrase. First of all, you know, we experience these 10,000 things when we come to Sesshin. We experience them all the time during a everyday life, but in Sesshin we really start to see these 10,000 things. You know? So because we come into a practice like Sesshin, or we approach meditation, and we have a certain goal about letting go of the 10,000 things. Actually, we only think there's about 20 or 30, or maybe just at one. You know, that's one thing we want to deal with. And we think it's a fairly mechanistic process of practice to be able to, you know, focus on your breath or a koan or just this experience and allow and let go of that couple of things that you think are issues in your life. And yet, you know, we get presented with 10,000 millions thoughts, ideas, hot, cold, food, sleep, thousands and thousands of things. There's another story about a monk who asks his teacher, he says, so when the 10,000 things come, what should we do? And the master says, don't try to control them. Which is very instructive too. Don't try to control the 10,000 things. Yeah, and it's another part that we're confronted with during Sesshin is that those 10,000 things are, you know, they're in a sense our 10,000 things, and they're, and some of those things we kind of have a responsibility for. You might say they're our karma, but there's a whole other 10,000 that we don't have any responsibility for, in a sense, you know. It's someone else's karma, or a nation's karma, or your ancestor's karma, or who knows what karma. You know, there are things that we inherit that we think we might be from our parents, it might be from our environment, it might be from your parents, it might be from who knows what. You know, the colour of the skin, the colour of your hair, your height, where you end up living, all those kinds of things are part of that 10,000 things. And so we have this large tail that we're dragging behind us, and then we come and see Sesshin in Chinese, they talk about dragons and snakes, the head is the symbol of awakening, and the tail is kind of a symbolic of delusion. And we all sit down here with this kind of awakened head. Well, that's the aspiration. Except, you know, reaching out behind us is this very, very long tail normally we don't want to acknowledge, but because you're sitting here during Sesshin, this large tail makes itself noticed. And then the first thing that we want to do is to get rid of this tail, to lose those 10,000 things. You know, those 10,000 things seem to be hindrances, some kind of issue that is coming up, and so we keep returning to our breath, we keep going back to our koan, we have this aspiration for practice, and these 10,000 things don't seem to be part of it. And I think it's And that's one of the real pitfalls, I think, of the spiritual life, is that we kind of think that putting ourselves in a particular spiritual practice will deal with that stuff. That's why we came here, that's why we want to sort it out. And even to the extent, you know, that the actual form of it, so the form of Sesshin was all around time, place, rules and guidelines, food, and creating this container so we can actually let this stuff go. And yet, as I said, you don't drop the stuff when you walk in. I remember when I was 21, I was, you know, having a hard time, you know, just emotionally and you know, unrequited love, that kind of thing. And then this was my 21st birthday, so for my 21st birthday, my parents suggested that I, my dad and my brother were going to Nepal, so they're going to shout me this trip to go to the mountains, which at any other time I would have been like, what an awesome gift. You know? That, back in those days it was pretty expensive. It's expensive now, but back then it was very expensive. And so it was a great gift, and I think my comment was, all right, depression doesn't need a passport. And I mean, but as it so happened, actually, depression did need a passport, and I felt a lot better afterwards. But the I guess during the time, but coming back, I really hadn't dealt with that stuff. So, and I think that's kind of in a similar way, a bit like Sesshin, is that if we come into practice and expect that by virtue of this setup and this particular practice that we're going to be able to drop all our troublesome parts of our lives, that's not what happens. And I think it's true too, if you you know that phrase, you know, there's smoke, there's fire, thousands of phrases, you know, but if you think that you'll be different here, then you're different in the rest of your life, you know, you'll be sadly mistaken as well. You know, I really notice that it's fascinating between, say, different facets of your life. You know, for me, it's big ones might be between work and family, and I find I get the same feedback. It doesn't matter where I am, you know, it's like there's always my same character flaws come up for both places, and people are very adept at pointing them out. and I come up here too, you know, it's like this kind of tale is kind of everywhere. If you're an organised person, you know, at home, if you're organised at work, if you're organised here, you know, it's like, if you're, you know, it's just all kinds of things. Just the way we are is the way we are. That doesn't mean we can, you know, seek to get better, but you know, it's our own gifts and our own challenges are manifest in every part of our lives. Kind of think about that same Christian analogy that Jesus was born in Bethlehem and raised in Nazareth, but he did his teaching in Jerusalem, and you kind of think, well, why didn't he do it in Nazareth? And it's like, well, you can obviously pick that up, is that, you know, everyone goes, well, that's just Jesus, you know, he's that snotty-nosed kid from around the block, you know. No, we take him seriously, so you've kind of got to move. And actually, the other guy at work, Megan, who's administration staff, she's kind of relating this a customer name comes up, and she's got to do a callback, and this guy's name is Jesus, you know, and she says, it's just like, I couldn't do it. I couldn't just call up and say, is Jesus there? was it try Jesus? It's probably from Mexico, where the word Jesus is quite common. But I digress. And it's the same. I think also at I've seen it, especially in spiritual practice, that even more container like this, like a monastery or a place where you are allowed to be a certain and certain kind of person, and all the supports for that with robes, shaved heads, with chanting, and even we'd kind of comment on it at the Zen Center that anybody who crossed that gate to come into the Zen Center already came with a whole range of expectations about who the monks were that were living there. And it was almost like a filter, and you knew that people who crossed that gate would be people like you, who'd have some kind of spiritual aspiration. And so it was a very kind of self-reflective environment there. And so you could kind of develop a persona that is focused on one particular thing, and you're well supported and even held up in a certain sense. And again, I found when I left the Zen Center, my comment to my mother about the Jesus of Nazareth thing, and it's like, just come back to Kandala, it's like, oh, there's hell from whatever. And she said, you compare yourself to Jesus, you arrogant son of a bitch. I said, no, I don't mean that. I just meant that your whole history, at times you've got to encounter your whole history again. And it doesn't matter who you thought you were or who other people thought you were. When you meet the people who really know you, you're back then who you are. So when the 10,000 things come, which they do, then what should we do? And the old master says, don't try to control them. It's that, and that really is a beautiful piece of instruction. Don't try to control them. Don't try to control them. So how do we not try to control them? I guess I was talking a little bit yesterday about that, that way we use our minds is wanting to get perspective, wanting to develop a strategy, wanting to control our thinking, wanting to plan some kind of way to improve ourselves, and it's a very natural and automatic process. And yet the master here is saying, don't try to control them, because the monk comes up and says, when the 10,000 things come, and that's our own kind of anguish to a certain extent. It's like, I'm feeling overwhelmed. I can't manage this. It's like all the stuff's going on, and I can't get a perspective on it. Whatever it is, and the old compassionate master here says, don't try to control them. And I think that you really kind of put yourself into that. So what is it to not control? And it's very, we talked about Colin a number of times at the group on Thursday night about this, it's about someone who's hanging onto this branch and a tree, they're way up in a tree and they're hanging on this branch with just their teeth, and your hands can't reach the branch and your legs can't touch one, so maybe we figured out that maybe they had their hands tied behind their back or whatever it was, but they're hanging on, and someone appears underneath the tree and asks them, and they're way up high in the tree, what's the meaning of Bodhidharma coming from the West, which is basically what's your life about and what's the most important thing. And so the koan is really what do you do? And it's very much one about you know, control, you're struck with this that question is all our questions, all it's the 10,000 things. It's all our questions. And so what are you hanging on to? And so that's our real question. It's like what are we hanging on to, and what could we do? And so the koan goes on to say, well, if you don't answer, you evade your responsibility, which is a quite a strong phraseology. You evade your responsibility, you know, to yourself, to everyone. You evade your responsibility. But if you do let go, you're going to die. It's a bit tough one. What do? Which is the koan. So, and so that's really is the practice of Sesshin, and so these 10,000 things are, you know, presenting themselves moment by moment, you know, as our life. And as I said in the beginning, you know, that phrase from Dogen Zenji, you know, that the 10,000, that the self advances and confirms the 10,000 things is delusion. That the 10,000 things advance and confirm themselves as enlightenment. You know, that we try and identify and manage and control and strategize, which is what the self does, and confirming that those 10,000 things indeed are out there and they're like this. This delusion, but that the 10,000 things advance and confirm themselves as themselves is enlightenment. So practically, what that points to is that to practicing being open. And how do you practice being open? It's very hard to be open, actually. So what do you practice? You actually practice not being closed. You know, practice is very much a practice of kind of not, and it's very hard to practice positivity, you know, in a certain sense, because it's hard to do that. But what we can practice is removing the barriers that stand in the way to our natural openness. So that means that. You know, we practice a certain sense of compassion and openness, and it's kind of a awakeness, a kindness to ourselves when this stuff comes up for us. That means not pushing away things that seem troublesome. And it's allowing the space, and so Sesshin is about allowing that space, that container, to grow. You know, until it encapsulates, you know, the whole world, all the 10,000 things. You know, so it includes pain in the legs, it includes distracted mind, it includes, you know, dashed hopes, it includes joy, you know, it includes expectations being met, it includes all kinds of things. Yeah, so we've got 2 full days left, so, you know, or today and tomorrow. Yeah, I just really, you know, encourage us to be, you know, to be open to this, you know, this experience that is, you know, 24/7 gift. And there's nothing held back. You know, use your time well. Be aware of when you're putting up barriers to this thing that's being presented. And doing that, as I kind of emphasized yesterday, that is the practice. That is both the beginning and the end. Right. Let's finish. Actually, just before we go, I had this, I forgot to read something, which I thought was quite lovely, just to finish off the talk. So this is from a book called After the Ecstasy, The Laundry by Jack Kornfield, who's an insight meditation teacher. So he's talking about a woman who was a Christian contemplative. So this is a Christian contemplative who's actively pursued a spiritual life for 30 years tells this story. I've always been moved by the longing of mystics like St. Teresa of Avila and St. John of the Cross. When I spent a year at a convent after a failed relationship and family troubles, I read their words over and over. I had the romantic idea that I was going through the dark night of the soul, but for me it never ended. There was no big experience, no mystical illumination at the end. When I left the convent and became a social worker, I kept up my prayer life and contemplative practice, but it remained ordinary and dark for years. Now I realise that I was somewhat depressed and lonely. Nothing very mystical about that. And 10 years ago, I made a retreat with Father B. Griffiths, a radiant old Catholic monk with an ashram in India. He had orange yogi-coloured robes and white hair, and deep joy beamed out of his being, like daffodils shining after a long winter. We talked, and he told me that I'd made up a whole story of how the spiritual journey should unfold. Then he held my face in his hands and beamed such love into me and said, "Why not be your own unique self? That's all God wants from you." And I wept and I danced and I laughed at all I was trying to be. And now for years my life of prayer and contemplative practice has continued in its ordinary way. But I'm not depressed and I've come to love my life. No great experience ever happened. But through loving myself, everything changed.